This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us in this hour three, rolling along this morning, and you can feel it through the entire NFL world this morning on the injury to Tua Tagovailoa last night as former players are now really, really speaking up, using a microphone that they may be getting paid to use, like analysts on television or commentators on radio, or using social media. But now we're seeing current and former players really lashing out as to what exactly was going on in the 1 week of Tua Tagovailoa from Sunday to last night regarding a head injury. And the more the players do this, the more former players do this, I wonder how this is going to affect Mike McDaniel in Miami. He is standing on podiums saying it all checked out. Everything worked the way we followed this to a T. We followed this to the letter. He was cleared. We played him. I wouldn't have done anything different. We went through everything. Player safety is at my forefront. But I wonder how he's going to be affected by this, because on the one hand, he's not being attacked directly, but he's going to be part of a system that is going to be attacked. He's going to be attached to the entity that everyone is going to go after him. That is the Miami Dolphins organization for how they handle this. He's going to be part of that. But on the same flip side, this league and fans and whatnot, we have short memories. And we talked about this with Deshaun Watson. There'll be all this outrage that Watson plays, and then he'll play, and then eventually it'll die out, because we've seen it become that way with this league. Players that have been in trouble and controversial and whatnot, they get back on the field, and over time, you start losing the momentum. The storm dies out. Will the storm die out here, and one day the Dolphins, Tua, will be playing well again late in November, December, if he plays again, and the Dolphins are winning games, and everyone goes, oh, yeah, remember that time in week four where he had that injury? Will that be the case where we'll still be talking about this situation? In a way, yeah, because concussion protocol is a big deal. But in another way, fans sort of like to have their moment of outrage, and then it just sort of goes away a little bit. And I really hope that the NFL isn't waiting for the storm to pass, that they're using what they learned in this outrage to sort of say, yeah, we, you know what, Players Association, we as an organization here in New York City, we want to get to the bottom of it too. So let's go down to Miami and let's ask a couple of questions. And I think it's appropriate to ask a couple of questions. All right, we'll talk about the NFL games this weekend.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us as we continue. Brian Barrett, WEEI, will join us coming up at the 40 past the hour. We'll talk Ime Udoka and the situation with the Celtics. They had media day early this week, but that's still a brewing situation. Yeah, and I hate to say this. I really do, because I think that you know, a situation like this would be newsworthy. But the fact of the matter is that Ime Udoka led the Celtics to the NBA Finals in his first year. And now he's gone. And now Joe Mazzulla is going to take over the team. And they don't know if he's going to be back. He's suspended for a year, but they don't know he's going to be back. All right, so let's get to week four in the National Football League. And if you don't know what we do here, we go over all the games. We don't give you our predictions. We don't do the lines or anything like that. We just give you the circumstances of the games, what to watch for in the games, anything newsworthy in those games, and tell you whether it's worth your time or not. Because your time is valuable. And if there's other things to watch, like other games to watch, watch those instead. Or you got to change your plans so you can catch it. All right, so let's get rocking and rolling. Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is where we're going for the Sunday early morning kickoff out in London, the first international game of the year. The Minnesota Vikings taking on the New Orleans Saints. Jameis Winston held out of practice on both Wednesday and Thursday, dealing with a back issue. Andy Dalton, good old Andy Dalton, could be the starter for the Saints if Winston cannot go. The Saints are in a little bit of trouble. They started off with a win, but now back-to-back losses against Tampa Bay and Carolina. And the Vikings are 2-1. Watch this because it's London. And what else are you going to do at 9:30 in the morning Eastern time?
Right? I will let you
Maybe
know.
Maybe you go to church, but if you come back from church, it'll be on.
I will.
I will give you another option. If this game goes sour fast, I will give you another thing to watch.
Which is?
The Manchester Derby.
What's the Manchester Derby?
It's Manchester City versus Manchester United.
Well, what if you're not into soccer?
It might slightly still be better than Vikings right. Saints.
Vikings Saints could be that bad. So
no, but I mean, honestly, what else are you doing that early in the morning?
Yeah.
At 9:30 Eastern time, 8:30
Central. Again, if you're attending
Central.
Religious services, yeah. I respect that. But it is an early
morning
wake
then,
up.
You know what, Tony? You might be able to get in like a good half hour of football before you, you know, while you're getting dressed, while you're getting ready.
Yeah.
You can have it on in the background.
Exactly. All right, so now the first noon kickoff game we're going to talk about is the Atlanta Falcons against the Cleveland Browns. By the way, these are two good rushing teams, but Nick Chubb is returning to Georgia where he played college ball, returning to the state as I think the NFL's leading rusher, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
341 yards on the year. Atlanta's an interesting story because Atlanta's been playing tough these first three games. I thought that they would absolutely stink. They are 1-2, but they're coming off a win against Seattle. They've been in two close losses. And the Browns are a pretty good 2-1 team. Saw them last Thursday night against the Steelers. They're not bad. So there's some things to like about this game. Cleveland could be a factor in when this is all said and done. They could be a team to watch for, especially when they get Deshaun Watson and all of his controversy on the field. I'm not saying watch this. It's not that, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's not terrible either. I'm not going 3. I'm going 2.5, which is a good 2.5, not a bad 2.5.
No, because I mean, you know, I mean, it's there's these two. Both these teams are interesting. I mean, the Falcons I can't quite figure out right now, and I think that's what's interesting because I thought like you thought for sure they're going to be the worst team in the league, going to get blown out in every single game. Don't really have much going on for them on both sides of the ball, but they, you know, they're tough. They're hanging in there, and the Browns God, who knows what you have with the Browns week to week.
Myles Garrett unlikely to play after flipping his Porsche. I kind of thought that story was interesting when they said he was going in an extensive speed. And I'm like, you think?
Well, not
really?
Only that,
isn't that
but the
part
fact
of the
that,
deal?
In fact, he had like 10 tickets in 2 weeks or something like that.
I don't think he was flipping his car at his school zone. How about we just sort of, you know, skip the whole he was speeding thing?
Yeah.
Chances are he was in his vehicle. All right, let's get Washington and Dallas. These guys have been rivals since 1960. It's been a very bizarre series lately. The Cowboys lost both games to Washington in 2020 when Dak Prescott was out, and they got routed the last time they played when Dak Prescott played last season. They put 56 on the board. Carson Wentz is not terrible. He's had 7 touchdowns, but Carson Wentz is still never going to overcome being Carson Wentz. I think he's a quarterback people like to criticize no matter what he does, but Washington's offense isn't that good. And the Dallas Cowboys have won back-to-back games with Cooper Rush at quarterback. Here's the thing. The offensive line for Washington, they allow you to get to Carson Wentz all day, every day. He was sacked 7 times in their game against Philadelphia, and Micah Parsons is one of many NFL players that is near the top in sacks already this season with 4. So one thing to watch out for if you're looking at some angle in this game.
Yeah, it's a throw out the record book game, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a rivalry game within that division. Always cool, but this one, a little dead on arrival to me. Teams are good.
This is another A. If Cooper Rush plays well, who needs Dak?
Who needs Dak? Jerry Jones will be all about the Cooper Rush Kool-Aid.
He wants a quarterback controversy. He thinks it's a good thing.
Hey, I'd be great. If we had Cooper Rush playing well, we'd be great. Terrible impression, but I had to do it. Let's go to the third game on the afternoon, fourth game overall, and that is the Seahawks and Lions. You know what? Dan Campbell made a mistake. Let's just be honest. Dan Campbell made a mistake. They went for the 54-yard field goal. They didn't get it. They lost that game last week. They shouldn't have lost that game last week, played Minnesota. I hope he learned, because he's got a pretty good team. I know they're 1-2, but they score a lot of points. You know, remember that line that NBA player said, I forget it was, Latrell Sprewell, maybe Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning, one of those guys. Remember during one of the lockouts, they said, we make a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money too. Remember that?
Yep.
Like try to, here's the Lions. We score a lot of points, but we give up a lot of points too. 31-31. That's the amount of points they score, and that's the amount of points they give up. So defensively, they're not really holding anybody back, but they're putting up some points on the board. So in that regard, they're playing a Seahawks team that we said it, that the game against the Broncos could be the one game where they go, yep, but we really are who we are. We don't have a good quarterback in Geno Smith. Yeah. We're not a very good football team. So pretending we are.
And the Lions are favored.
Yep, the Lions are favored. 4 points.
That's a huge point.
It's more than a field goal.
Remember, last time they were only one.
That's right.
Against the Commanders.
DeAndre Swift dealing with a shoulder injury, may not play. Amon St. Brown might not also play either. So there's something going on with him. But these are just common injuries you see in the report.
Yeah,
they're likely to play. Although the shoulder injury for DeAndre Swift seems serious enough that Campbell says he could be out for multiple games. We'll see. They all kind of play this during the week, but in the end, they probably do play. How about the Tennessee Titans and the Indianapolis Colts? I know we've been saying it, and we'll keep saying it about the Colts. Matt Ryan is their fifth starting quarterback in 5 years to start the season as the starter. So this is the fifth different quarterback the Titans have seen playing their divisional matchup. And the Titans are coming off a win. They are 1-2. It's a game that features two of the top best running backs in the NFL in recent years, in Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor. The offensive line for Tennessee is struggling a little bit, but have gotten a little bit better, but they're still struggling. But the Colts can't generate any pass rush. So this is a team, both of these teams are severely flawed, but yet were the teams to pick in the AFC South. I think this is a 3, maybe a 3.5, but it's not what it could have been, which is a matchup of two of the best teams in the division. After 3 weeks, it's two of the bottom teams in the division along with Houston.
So. Yeah, 2 years ago, this would have been must-watch TV.
Right.
And now I just feel like it's, I don't know.
Well,
I
mean, maybe they'll get better.
I mean, I look at this and I feel like it's two teams going in the wrong way. Wrong direction where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. So Tennessee and Indianapolis, not really the must-see game that I kind of thought it could be, but it's not.
Yeah.
Bears and Giants.
Oh, geez.
All right. Now, here's the thing. Years ago, I used to work. I used to be one of those stringers that you would hear on Saturday college football shows on certain networks. And I used to cover Air Force. So I would call in and they would go, let's go to Air Force and whatever. And I would give an update. And I remember one time, Air Force was playing Navy, and both teams ran the option offense. And I made a joke on my report that this 60-minute football game will be over in 30 minutes. And I was right. It was one of the fastest football games I had ever been to. We were in and out in no time. Now, the NFL, with TV timeouts and whatnot, is not going to give you the same thing. But these are two of the top four rushing teams in the NFL. The Bears are two in the league in rushing. The Giants are four. Khalil Herbert is filling in nicely for David Montgomery, and Saquon Barkley is having a good year for the Bears. They're not going to throw because neither quarterback can, and they don't have anybody to throw to. This could be a very fast game if it wasn't for TV timeouts and whatnot. So if you like old-fashioned run-the-ball football, that's your game. If you don't, stay as far away from this disaster as possible, even though both teams are 2-1.
It's not going to be fun to watch.
No.
The Bears have 23 completions.
Yeah.
For the entire season.
It's no Sterling Shepard on the Giants side, so why would you even throw the ball? Because Galloway can't catch it and doesn't really want to. And if you're the Bears, there's nobody to throw to anyway, and Justin Fields can't deliver the football even if he wanted to. He's got they're averaging 79 yards in the air per game. I know it's skewed because you'll say, oh, yeah, but they were playing in a downpour in the first week. I get it, but still, you can put up better numbers than that. Bears, Giants, throw this in the trash can. If you like running the game, take it, but otherwise throw it in the trash can.
Which is odd to say about two 2-1 teams.
Right. Two teams that are 2-1 with winning records? Yikes. All right, how about Jacksonville and the Eagles? This might be the early game of the day.
Must watch.
This is must watch. It's CBS. I don't think it's Nance Romo because they got another CBS game that they're probably at. But this is one of the top games of the day. Jacksonville, Philadelphia.
One thing I do hope for. Bring in Gardner Minshew to run a play against the Jaguars. Just one play.
Just one play, just so they can remember what Stash looked like.
Yeah, a two-point conversion play or some trick play that you have to, in hopes to get a first down. Do it.
Eagles 3-0. We love them at Jalen Hurts. Magnificent team all the way around. They do not have they do not have any flaws as we know of right now. They're playing that good on both sides of the ball. The Jaguars are really playing well. They're scoring a lot of points too. And Doug Peterson has changed the culture there. As we heard yesterday, In our interview. He's changing the culture there. And so they're 2-1. The Eagles are 3-0. Very, very good game. There is a better game on the schedule in the afternoon. We'll get to that as well as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we are going to continue to roll through the NFL schedule, tell you what we like and we don't like as the NFL goes rolling into week number 4. All right, before we set you up with probably the biggest afternoon matchup, let's get the one that is, it's like a, I don't know what to make of this one. Jets and Steelers at Acrisure Stadium. The Steelers 1-2 with a bottom half offense and running game and passing game. The Jets, though, getting Zach Wilson back. That'll be good, but I don't know how good. But by the way, did you know the Jets have only one win in Pittsburgh in franchise history? So they don't go there and win very often. In fact, hardly ever. But the Steelers are looking for a win to even up their record and just sort of maybe calm the Mitch Trubisky waters a little bit. But I'm telling you right now, if they lose to the Jets and they do so by scoring 15 points, 16 points, whatever, the heads are going to be screaming for a change.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say heads are going to roll, and I was going to correct you to saying one head will roll.
Right. Well, they better, people are going to be nuts. They're already nuts now. If they lose to the Jets, they're going to be absolutely on fire.
Yeah, I mean,
city to change.
I think the one watchable thing about this game is the hope that, you know, maybe the Kenny Pickett era starts now.
Yeah, maybe that Trubisky struggles like in the first half, and they just make the change at halftime.
And then Tomlin's sitting there going, "It's the Jets. Put Pickett in."
I will tell you what, Tomlin. If you make this change, you stick with it. You get him. You let him go through every bump and bruise in this league.
I think he would.
Yeah, you don't go, well, you struggled after 3 weeks. This is the guy you chose. This is the test by fire. You don't put Trubisky back in when he's struggling. You make that decision. You make sure he can take that job in those reins for however long it takes to get a real full evaluation of his ability to play in the NFL. So don't play the yank him, start him, yank him, sit him. Don't play that game. The Jets are 1-2, and they haven't done anything this year except for the 22 seconds that they led the Browns.
All right, before you get to the game to watch in the noon hour, skip it, because go to the other game that's exactly like the Jets-Steelers game.
All right, Chargers-Texans. Texans 0-2-1, Chargers 1-2. Justin Herbert, is he playing or not? What do we know?
I don't know.
What's the deal? Still a game-time decision?
The reason why I wanted you to skip over the marquee game was because everything you said about Jets-Steelers, just ditto. For Chargers-Texans.
I hope I see Chase Daniel, because it would mean they made the right decision on a guy with a fractured rib cartilage.
Don't stick with Chase Daniels once Herbert is healthy, all right? That's the only difference we're talking here.
Exactly. The Texans, yikes. I feel for Davis Mills. He seems like a likable guy.
I think he's a good dude.
And maybe he needs a little bit more. It's a new coach, I get it, but I don't know. This is also like Steelers-Jets.
Yeah. That's why
you're forced with it, maybe you can take a couple of shots and knock one back and plow through it.
You know,
but
unless you're a degenerate like I'll be, you know, watching this game because that's your team and it's definitely on in your area, I will be watching this game.
Stick through it. But, all right, the Bills and the Ravens. That's the marquee game in the afternoon. Hello. This one on the road. By the way, the Bills, three of their first four games have been on the road. The Ravens have been
spreading Bills Mafia
offensively
across the nation.
This is such an interesting game. The Ravens and the Bills have two of the top offenses in the NFL right now. Lamar Jackson has 10 passing touchdowns. He's run for two. Josh Allen has 9 touchdown passes. The Bills are the top passing team in the NFL. The Ravens are behind them. But you know what's the difference? The Bills have the best defense in the NFL, and the Ravens have the worst.
Yeah.
That's the difference. But otherwise, the Ravens haven't really needed it. They have found ways to just win some games. They couldn't hold back the Dolphins, otherwise they'd be 3-0. They beat you by scoring more points than you. I know that sounds simple, but they just go, fine. You want 35, we'll get 36. You want 37, we'll get 38. That's the way they're playing right now.
This is going to be so much fun. I cannot wait to see Lamar Jackson against that Bills defense.
I can't wait. Lamar Jackson betting on himself this season.
He is playing otherworldly right now,
and
I'm all for it.
Magnificent. Like I said, 10 touchdown passes, 2 rushing touchdowns. It's Mark Andrews has been great for the Ravens as well. This is going to be a ton of fun. And again, the Bills still dealing with some injuries to their secondary. So that being said, it is A++ game on the schedule. So, all right, let's move on to the late afternoon games. And let's go to Charlotte, where the Carolina Panthers will take on Arizona. Both teams 1-2. The Panthers are a mess. And guess what? Guess what the news was this week? I'll give you a hint. It involves a star that can't be a superstar all the time because he's hurt all the time. Christian McCaffrey is dealing with an injury.
Really?
Yeah, what a shock. Wow, I know. I know, seriously. But could play this weekend, but once again kept out of practice because of a nagging injury.
Yep.
Arizona's 1-2, haven't really popped yet, but this is a game of two desperate teams. If they want to be in this mix for whatever wild card scenario the NFC is going to throw at us, they were two teams that were in that collection at the beginning of the year. Baker Mayfield has struggled, only completing 57% of his passes with just 3 touchdowns. Still better than Sam Darnold, who's hurt. So you gotta go with Baker Mayfield.
That's not saying much.
You have no choice.
You gotta throw that in there at the end. You're not sitting there going, "Yo, he's still better than Sam Darnold." You're going,
"Is he better than PJ Washington?"
Ooh,
good question.
It's better than a hurt player.
Yeah.
So you gotta roll with him.
Packers and the Patriots.
Used to be Brian a great game.
Hoyer. Yeah, this used to be fun, right? When we'd get them very rarely, but we got used to get them. It was a former Super Bowl matchup.
Yep.
Back in Super Bowl 31. It was Super Bowl 31. Yeah, 31. Super Bowl 31. The Packers beat the Patriots in New Orleans. Of course, it was Favre and Bledsoe. And then we had Rodgers and Brady when they would meet every now and then in the regular season. But right now, you're getting Brian Hoyer against Aaron Rodgers because Mac Jones is dealing with a high ankle sprain.
Hoyer.
Remember, Hoyer lost his job to a rookie at the time, Jarrett Stidham, who's now with the Raiders.
Yep.
Hoyer has played for, I think, a number of different teams, but he's lost his last 6 starts, including his last one. He started for Cam Newton in 2020.
Yeah, he hasn't won a game since, what, 2018, I think?
Yeah.
Or 2016?
So that's what he does. He just doesn't win football games.
Yeah.
Whatever you want a quarterback to do, the thing you want him to do the most, he doesn't do. So that's the decision. I think they got Bailey Zapp as a rookie quarterback. I don't know. So it's Brian Hoyer's
job. Just making up names, man. That's all you're doing. You're just making up names.
It's what I do. Broncos and Raiders, as I mentioned earlier. The Raiders better win. They're done. I'm sorry. 0-4. I'm not looking for a Dolphins. Like, they would have to win the next 4 games just to get a 500.
Yeah.
When other teams would be 5-1, no, 5 be 7-1, 6-2, they'd have to go on a 4-game win streak just to get to 500 to be like, okay, now can we get into the party? And they're like, nah, you still need to bring another.
A lot
case.
Of people pick to make the playoffs,
right?
You know, I mean, if the Broncos get over on them, which isn't right now, I'm looking at this team, it's not a tall order.
And by the way,
and then I don't know what you start doing then. I don't know pointing the finger at who on the Raiders.
If the Broncos win yet another offensively ugly game, like if they win 12-9 or something like that, we're going to have to deal with a 3-1 Bronco team that doesn't look anything like it.
And Broncos are going to be motivated. I mean, I know nobody on this team ever dealt with them, but it is against one of their former coaches.
It is. It is against Josh McDaniels.
So,
yeah. Yep. So, Broncos Raiders, always a good matchup just in terms of rivalry, but not always a good game. But the Raiders have won the last 6 against the Broncos. But don't forget, the Broncos were just a mess over the last couple of years with their quarterbacks. And so, you know, count it, but, you know, don't count it. How about Chiefs-Buccaneers? It is officially now at Raymond James Stadium. They decided that the area did not get hit hard enough to move this game to Minnesota. It's Patrick Mahomes against Tom Brady. It's 2-1 versus 2-1. Both teams coming off losses. The Chiefs score 29 points per game. The Buccaneers allow just 9. Offense versus defense. Irresistible force, immovable object. Sunday night, it's a rematch of Super Bowl 55, so there you go. Take that one to the bank. How about Rams 49ers, a NFC championship rematch? Jimmy Garoppolo trying to bounce back, and the Rams trying to get to 3-1 after an embarrassing loss in week 1. That could be interesting on Monday night with Buck and Aikman at Santa Clara, California. There you go. We'll come back with Brian Barrett, WEEI, as we continue. It's Wake Up.
listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Give them, look for them for quote at progressive.com. Brian Barrett joins us, WEEI in Boston, on the suspension of Ime Udoka and how it's going to be affecting the Celtics, how it has affected the Celtics. How are you, Brian?
Tony, what's up, man? How are you?
Good. Before we, if you don't mind, before we get to the Celtics stuff, can you give us the latest on Mac Jones? I know they're so fun with this, but in the end, what do we think about Mac Jones?
Yeah, I can't see how he's going to have a chance to play on Sunday. I know that Mac is telling teammates that he feels good. He was part of the game planning process and all that. But we do know that he has a high ankle sprain, which is usually at least 4 weeks or so. So right now they're still going through the process trying to determine whether or not he's going to have surgery or not. So it does look that they're going to roll with Brian Hoyer coming up on this game on Sunday, which is unfortunate. It's also unfortunate if Mac misses any extended period of time because, quite frankly, Tony, there's been some issues in terms of the offense in general, the play calling, et cetera. But Mac has played really poorly through the first three games of the season. And like I said, I'm empathetic to having Matt Patricia as your play caller, but 5 interceptions already on the season, tied for the lead league, and the only guy that has a worse passer rating than him that's played 3 games is Justin Fields, so he needs this time to get better.
All right, so let's get to the Celtics. This was a story that the Celtics knew about in July, but we just found out about it. Was there any inclination something was brewing within the Celtics this summer about Ime Udoka?
Nothing got out until last week when that story emerged on Wednesday night from Adrian Wojnarowski. Obviously, as you mentioned, the investigation had been going on for a while, but they did a pretty good job of essentially keeping this under wraps. Nobody knew anything about it except the people involved. I mean, the press conference that they had this week, the media day, I should say, the players really don't know what's going on in terms of this whole situation. So the Celtics really, unfortunately, they found themselves in a bad situation on that Wednesday night because Adrian Wojnarowski has the report that just something's going on. And remember, Tony, that report was so vague. It was just like it's a violation of team rules. Nobody knew exactly what it was. Then Sham Sarania of the Athletic Stadium then puts it out there that essentially this is a consensual relationship. And then we wouldn't find out until really 24 hours after that that there was also a report that it was unwanted comments. What we do know is Wick reiterated, the owner of the Celtics, Wick Grossback, reiterated at that press conference on when they held the press conference on that Friday that it's multiple violations. So there's obviously a lot more to the story. And the problem for the Celtics is the leak, right? Because they were planning to release something prior to having media day. They were going to put this out there and somebody leaked it. Now, my hunch would be, if you connect the pieces on this, that it's somebody from Ime Udoka's camp, because think about it. It doesn't benefit the Celtics whatsoever for this information to get out there. So I know it's nobody in ownership. I know it's nobody with a lot of power within the Celtics organization, because think about the reaction on Thursday. It was basically pro-Ime, right? Because not everything was out there, where you had Stephen A. Smith saying that this is ridiculous. You had everybody, really in the national media, the perception was this seems like a punishment that's over the top. So the Celtics did not want that out there. You look at it, there's connections between CAA with Adrian Wojnarowski. Ime is also represented by CAA. So my hunch would be, and obviously I don't know this 100%, that it was Ime's camp that got in front of this, not the Celtics, because clearly they were waiting to release something, and they couldn't because they were in negotiations, not negotiations. They were talking with their legal team.
That's if I don't mind you asking that. I've been to many press conferences where there's been a suspension and a firing, and I've seen it pretty standard, kind of cookie cutter, as I know you have too. And then I've been to others where I'm like, lawyers are involved here. Lawyers are very, very involved in the way this is worded, the way this has been conducted. I got that feeling, but I'm not in the belly of the beast. Was that the feeling? Like, this is very lawyered up.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they have to protect themselves in this situation. So that's why part of it, and I know it's frustrating to not only, like, the public, but also the players, right? Because the players are sitting there and they have the same information, probably a little bit more than you and I, Tony, but
yeah,
they don't
sure.
have a lot of information either, right? The only people that really know are obviously Ime and obviously who else was involved, but the Celtics ownership, the front office, HR, and lawyers. That's it. That's the only people that know within the Celtics organization. So the reason this is so under wraps is because they're trying to protect themselves legally from everything that's going on here. So that's the unfortunate part where, and that's why, like, one of the things I said on when it broke was, I don't want to make a judgment either way because we don't have enough information to have some sort of really, like, to, for lack of a better term, like, I was really perplexed that people were coming out here with all these hot takes judging what the punishment was when we don't have all the information. Like, we may find out a lot more, or we may not find out at all because this is such a tough legal situation. But yeah, that was pretty much what people thought at the time.
Especially in a world where everybody loves to play the I know something you don't know game, I feel like there's been more people saying, oh, I can't say anything, but boy, oh boy, I know some things. But they're not releasing. It's like taking a box into a room and going, just don't look at the box. It's really important. But if you just ignore the box, but there's a box here that's really important. Now everybody wants to know what's in the box, right? But you may not have anything in the box.
Right. And I think that's part of, like, so, I mean, think about these players, right? Like, this team went all the way to the NBA Finals a year ago. They were two wins away. So they don't, like, it's a weird position for them to be in. Like, they were obviously explaining that something bad was going on. They don't have all the details of it. So Ime Udoka got through to a lot of these guys, right? Jason Tatum had this breakout season where he was first-team All-NBA. They switched Marcus Smart to the point guard, and that really catapulted the Celtics to make that run in the second half of the season. And that's why you could tell they had a really difficult time. I mean, Marcus Smart, I don't think he was good in the press conference where he essentially said nobody died, where it's like, okay, that's a little bit over the top. Like, make sure you know, like, what's going on before, you know, you give a sort of like a statement like that. So my whole thing is like, okay, some of these guys still love Ime, but they don't know exactly what Ime is accused of. So it's like very difficult for them to sort of process this all emotionally because they don't know the details of what's going on. And that's not the Celtics' fault, right? I mean, they can't tell the players what it is, right? Because for legal reasons. So that's why it's such a odd situation and a really peculiar place for the Celtics players to be in.
Brian Barrett joins us from The Ringer on the Celtics. By the way, congratulations on your Boston podcast. That's outstanding news. You're one of the best in the business. I'm glad you're doing that.
I appreciate it, Tony. Thanks, man.
Yeah. So let's get to the when we had you on during the playoffs, just I think it was the Celtics were making the run. You did an outstanding job of really explaining Ime Udoka's presence on this team, what he did for this team, and how they turned their season around. That being said, can they keep that up? How much of his absence is going to be affected, whether it's Joe Mazzulla or not?
Yeah, so I don't think much is going to change schematically, right? Because they're going to take a lot of the things that Ime put in, because basically it's the same coaching staff. Now, they were trying to get Jay Larinaga back from the Clippers, who was previously with Brad's staff. But I do think it's sort of a weird dynamic, right? So Joe Mazzulla is 34 years old. Joe Mazzulla last year was actually in the second row, Tony. So he wasn't even on the main bench. He was on the second row. You had guys like Damon Stoudemire and Ben Sullivan who were on the first row. Now, Joe Mazzulla is a carryover from the Brad Stevens staff, the only one. The good thing for Mazzulla is this. Jason Tatum talked about him during the NBA Finals. Tatum actually went to Ime when Ime got the job and said, hey, you should keep this guy on the staff. So the good thing is the star player really likes him. But here becomes the question. I think he's going to be fine schematically and all that stuff. But what happens when players have to be checked, right? Because Ime didn't care. Ime would call out anybody. That's what he said the minute he got here, and he did it all season long, all the way into the playoffs. When Tatum had a poor game in the middle of the season, he said, hey, what are you doing when your shot's not falling? Basically saying, you've got to be a better playmaker. So he wasn't scared to do anything like this. And I know it may sound like hyperbolic, Tony, but Ime's sort of an intimidating figure, right? I mean, the guy is absolutely huge, right? So I think that sort of, I mean, for some, maybe that sounds crazy, but I think that factored in. But yeah, I do think there's, and he's going to get a real opportunity to get this job. And I know the Celtics are very high on Joe Mazzulla, but we can't really make a judgment on Mazzulla in terms of those tough internal situations until we see it. Like, for example, here's one. Malcolm Brogdon, they brought in via trade. They have Derek White here, who was pretty good for them last year, although at times he didn't want to look at the hoop, which was a problem. And then, of course, they have Marcus Smart. So those are three guys that think they should be closing games. Well, what happens when, remember, in the finals, Ime sat Marcus Smart down, and it wasn't a problem. So what happens when Joe Mazzulla has to do that, and it's not Ime Udoka? I think that's going to be sort of the interesting challenge for Joe Mazzulla going forward.
All right, I'm going to ask you to speculate here, and I hate to put you here, but all the little things that you're hearing, we've seen people get suspended so that they can organize a way to properly fire. Is that what you're hearing about with this situation, or is there an opportunity he does come back after a year?
I don't see it. I can't see him coming back after being suspended for a year, and the fact that how upset the Celtics ownership was, how upset Brad Stevens was at the press conference. And I don't know this for a fact, but I think this is just, okay, we have the suspension now. And like this whole thing has been so secretive, if you will, because of the lawyers, et cetera, because the legal aspect, I think they're waiting for an opportunity to when they're in the clear to do something along those lines. That would be my hunch. And here's another weird thing, Tony. Like, what if Joe Mazzulla ends up being a really good coach, right?
Right,
so it's like,
right.
Well, we were thinking about the Ime situation, but it's definitely not worth bringing him back now or even kicking the tires on that particular situation. I would say this too. Like, the Celtics, if they decide Joe Mazzulla is not their guy, there's going to be plenty of candidates for that job when you have Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So I wouldn't be worried about that in terms of, like, finding the next head coach. I feel like they feel like they have enough information where it's really not worth bringing Ime Udoka back.
I told you it was the last question. It's not. My apologies. I got to ask you one more. Are the fans trusting the Celtics here? Are they trusting that the Celtics did an investigation? They don't know all the details, but they figure they know the details and they've made the right decision. I mean, this is, you said, two wins away from a championship. You don't get rid of coaches like that unless there's a good reason. Are they trusting that the reason was the right reason?
I think initially the reaction from Celtics fans was much like everybody else, where it was like, wait, this seems like a little bit ridiculous, a consensual relationship, but we'd find out there was, you know, more details and more reporting to the story. So I think initially Celtics fans were pretty upset about the punishment, but after we heard the press conference from Wick and after you saw some of the reporting over the next 48 hours after the initial report, I think they understood that there's more to the story. And one of the things that sort of like shook everything was Matt Barnes basically came out and he was like defending Ime. He made a post about it, like really defending Ime. And then the next day he comes out and he says he talked to somebody that this is way worse. He'll never coach in the NBA again. So I think that people are now realizing that we just got the tip of the iceberg and this thing could be really ugly when or if we ever find out really all the news that is part of this.
Brian, great stuff. Really appreciate you coming on as always, my man. Thank you so much again.
Have a good one, Tony.
You got it. Brian Barrett at The Ringer. Again, catches Boston podcast there as well. Great stuff and great insight into what's going on with the Celtics. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, again, thanks to Brian Barrett at The Ringer for his insight on the Celtics. It's a weird situation, isn't it?
It's so bizarre.
How often do we get a story of somebody's firing or a suspension, and we don't know exactly why?
Well, that, you know, like what Brian put up, too. What if Mazzulla turns out to be a fantastic coach?
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's like, sorry, you know what? We're going to lose you to another team now because we committed to this guy before.
Right. Yeah, I agree with him 100%. I think you and I were touching on it. I think it's a suspension to get all your ducks in a row legally. You're like, you're just organizing it. You're suspending him so you can do the due diligence. You can go over all the paperwork. You can go over all the contract.
Yep.
You can figure out what you can and can't get away with, what money you need to pay out, what money you get to keep.
Cross the I's and dot the T's.
Exactly. Make your case in case he does sue you. Make sure it's ironclad, because he's probably going to sue you, and then you're going to have to take it to court and show how you did it. Because it's not just about firing. I mean, I'm sure he can be fired for any reason, but it's what you're paying him. Do you pay out the contract? Well, you don't want to pay out the contract. It's not there. It's not our fault. You know, it's not based on wins and losses. You had a relationship with somebody that broke team policy, and by all accounts, it's even worse than that. And you can't just collect a huge check for doing those things. Like, so we're going to make sure we keep every dime that we possibly can, but he'll probably sue. They'll have to have their case buttoned up tight, and that's probably what this is all about. But it is, if you talk to any reporter, anybody that's ever done any investigative reporting, I don't care if it's sports, politics, international affairs, entertainment, whatever, it doesn't matter. One of the reasons how they stay in existence is because there is always, always somebody who will come out and go, I know something you don't know, and I can't wait to say it. There's always leaks. There's always somebody that can't keep their mouth shut. You get three people in a room, and they all have a secret. One of them is telling, right? Secret between two people, easier to control because the person, if I leak, I'll know the other one knows it was me. But if you get three or more, there's always somebody going, I can't help myself. This is what's happening.
Well, and that's why you can't put into, you know, too much like what Matt Barnes is coming out and saying.
Right. And that's what kind of drives me about Matt Barnes is because when he's like, it's 1,000 times worse than I initially thought. Well, why aren't you telling us? You're not bound by anything. You're not bound by something legal. You work in the business now. Why won't you say anything? Why won't you say sources tell me this, this, and this? That's how investigative reporters get away with that. They can do that. It's the world famous people are saying question that you get a lot. Like if I want to ask like Mitch Trubisky about him being a starting quarterback, I'm like, people are saying you're not doing a good. I'm not saying it's me, but people are saying, even though it is me.
Or you just come out and you go, you know, sources are telling me that Mike Tomlin's planning on going with Kenny Pickett in the fourth quarter.
Where'd you get that? Just people are talking. Can be the anonymous people are talking. Same thing here. Matt Barnes could go, people are saying. So what is he? Does he have nothing and just wants to be relevant? Or does he have something he doesn't want to share it?
And at the same time, Matt Barnes, you're not really the most trustworthy person in the NBA.
I agree.
That's the other problem we're having.
That's the other problem. So, yep, it's a very, very weird situation. More on the Tua Tagovailoa injury from Thursday night and what the NFL may or may not do about it next as we continue with Hour 4. It's Wake Up Call.